Off the Ball Breakfast.
I'm not going to get into a... I'm not bringing Tommy Rooney to do a power rankings of who's a greater player, Michael Murphy or Aidan O'Shea.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
Good evening and welcome along to Thursday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you till 10 o'clock this evening. And coming up tonight, we're going to be speaking to Waterford FC captain Paul Jagamond ahead of our live game tomorrow night, where carrying Waterford versus Bowes in the League of Ireland Premier Division. Paul Jagamond's obviously been back. He's playing his second season. He's now captain and leading the line again for his second season at Waterford FC. So we'll catch up on Life with Amond from 7:30. Then from 8 o'clock, Richie Hogan will join us in studio to look ahead to the All-Ireland Hurling quarterfinals this weekend. And then after 9 o'clock, we are bringing you the crappy quiz on a Thursday. Too good for Friday nights. They said that it has been bumped up to the primetime night of Thursdays, mostly to do with the fact that we've got League of Ireland commentary on Friday. And we've listened, we've heard you, and you've got in touch, and we said we have to keep the crappy quiz alive. So it's coming your way this evening. It's going to be Nathan versus Jer versus Arthur. A heavyweight clash, a clash of the titans.
Excuse me?
It's going to be big brain versus big brain versus big brain.
Okay.
Our number is 0879 180 180. If you want to get in touch with us, you've already heard the voice of Nathan Murphy. How are you, Nathan?
I'm very well.
And Colin Mullaney is here. How are you, Colin?
How's it going?
So we're looking at this tournament happening at the moment in the United States. This is the curtain raiser for the main event next year. Some people are confident about the Republic of Ireland making it. Are you looking at this Club World Cup at the moment, Nathan, and think to yourself, geez, yeah. Yeah, you've got the likes of your Audi fields, your Lumen fields. I can't wait to traverse these sorts of grounds next year. This is looking like a bloody good stage to play some football in the middle of the summer.
I don't know if we're going to get to Lumen Field in Seattle next year. I do like the look of the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. I was in Atlanta a couple of years ago and there was no American football on at the time, but it's the most impressive stadium I've ever seen from the outside. And I think Atlanta is sort of the hotbed of American football, though again, maybe not turning out in such numbers for this Club World Cup. What it has made me realise very quickly is we've gone through a very sweet spot of World Cups that have suited us time zone wise. Because Russia, Qatar, okay, there might be some early in the day, which maybe I'm slightly biased because our work allows us to watch these games
That's
at 11
That's
o'clock. It fills up our day. It means it rolls nicely into the evening. It's a long time since we've had games kicking off at midnight Irish time.
Brazil. Was it even Brazil? Probably it was probably closer to us.
I think the latest kickoffs might have been sort of 8 o'clock.
That's perfect.
Yeah,
ideal.
0-2, wasn't it? Early kickoffs. 0-2 when Ireland were playing. Wasn't the Cameroon game early in the morning?
Yeah. Early on a Saturday morning.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Germany game was late because obviously television on wheels.
Yeah.
0-2, there was a lot of very early games because I remember watching England, Brazil in 0-2 and did that thing. I suspect a lot of people of my age of that period would have been who were in college of you stayed up all night to watch the early game and woke up to the replays of Ronaldinho's free kick going in, having slept my way pretty much through it all. Not quite having the staying power. So I think that's part of my thoughts on this tournament so far. I'm sure you want to get into the deeper parts. I assumed that when there's football on the TV, I'm going to watch the football on the TV, regardless of what it is. And like the Nations League finals, you go, oh, listen, four good teams, but is it that important? And then it turns out it's maybe the best football we see all year.
But this isn't on
couple of TV. Problems. This isn't on the TV. You have to go searching for it. So it's on DAZN. But I think it's freely available on DAZN, and there are other ways of getting DAZN as well. But also, it feels like so many of the games are on later in the evening. It's just passing me by, and I'm waking up, and I'm like, oh, God damn it. Also, there's too many teams, is the other problem.
And there's mismatches, and nobody cares who wins the trophy at the end of it. Which
but we don't know that
important.
Bit. I still think we don't know that bit as to whether nobody cares who wins the trophy.
The big teams don't care about winning the trophy.
They
care about winning the cash. The clubs care about winning the cash,
no,
the prize money.
I'm not convinced. We don't know that yet. Let's see how we feel about this in a couple of weeks' time when we get to the quarterfinals on. And you might have one or two of the lesser teams have made it through and it's going to be a brilliant thing for them. But you'll generally have some of the best teams in the world competing for this. And I think they're going to want to win it.
Would Chelsea trade their Conference League for the Club World Cup?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Every like day of the
players,
week.
The players.
A conference league.
Yeah, that's like, that's
if you're
what I'm
asking
saying.
Me,
that's the point.
Would Paris Saint-Germain trade their Champions League Club World Cup?
Like, I mean,
sorry, of course Chelsea would trade their conference league for the Club World Cup.
I think maybe it's on a par. Well, is the Carabao Cup more prestigious than the Club World Cup?
No, of course it's not.
What? How is it not?
Because these are some of the best clubs from every part of the world. It's becoming a more major trophy. And you know what? Every time the Club World Cup would have come around in its old guise in December and, Liverpool would have to go and it means we can't play in the Carabao Cup. We'll have to put out all the kids and all this stuff. You look at the teams they're playing against and what it means to them when they get to the final. So I think maybe if it's Chelsea or Manchester City, there'll be questions as to what it means. I think for pretty much any other club, like Real Madrid are desperate to win this.
But why?
Because they want to be seen as the biggest club in the world.
To the players, to real football fans, are you going to now...
What's all a real football fan mean?
Ignore that remark. Just any football fan, and say in Europe, say from our standpoint, through the prism that we watch football, is somebody going to have more respect for Real Madrid if they win this competition? Is their view on the club going to change?
But you've just summed
one
up
iota as a result
exactly
of them
winning. My point, which is, yes, through our prism, this doesn't feel that important
who are they playing for?
Big world out there. What I'm saying is that maybe Chelsea and Manchester City, it won't feel as important right now as it would for almost every other club in this, as it would for the South American clubs, the clubs from the Middle East that are playing in this. I think for them, this is maybe one of their biggest opportunities.
Well, for them, they can make the case that it's like, we'll get one over our European counterparts who've got multiple when it comes to the resources available to them, and it's an underdog story and we're doing it against the big man. I think there's that sort of aspect of it, and there's like a real element of glory.
That's
Real Madrid.
Cup. That's the World Cup.
Like,
if you're Real Madrid, this becomes a bigger and bigger event because you want to underline that you're the biggest club in world football, and to do that, you win the Club World Cup.
And would you accept that? Would you be like, oh, debate over, biggest club in football, sorted, they've won the Club World Cup. I can't argue with that. Bigger club, a more successful club right now. They've had a more successful season than
PSG. I know what you're saying. Whose season would you prefer if Real Madrid win this? Theirs or Paris Saint-Germain? I think right now you would prefer Paris Saint-Germain's. But I think for what Real Madrid are trying to do, and in years to come, that this will be looked back on as an achievement.
But I think that's the thing. I think if Real Madrid were to take it seriously this year, then it gains prestige next year, and year on year it builds, or however often it's held.
They are taking
it seriously and place an emphasis on winning
it. Look at the teams that are lining out in each of these matches. They're not using it as some sort of pre-season or end of season tour. This isn't Manchester United on their open top parade around Malaysia. Like, this is teams putting out their best possible 11.
Larry's been in touch, and his point supports your point.
So he supports my point.
Madrid paid 10 million for one player just to play in this competition, says Larry on WhatsApp. Now, I would say the hierarchy of Real Madrid see this as a really prestigious thing. And that's what I mean by the real football fan point. That's like, the again, probably through our prism, a very European-centric way of looking at football. I accept that. And I accept that maybe the South American teams could come along, and if they beat a European team in a knockout stage, I can understand why that's a huge moment of glory for them, given it's a David versus Goliath situation. But if you're a Liverpool football fan, or if you're an Arsenal fan, or if you're a Manchester United fan, you're not all of a sudden being like, geez, our position in the pecking order of English clubs is under threat because Chelsea have gone and won the Club World Cup in front of 20,000 people in an 80,000-seater stadium.
Oh, I think you're missing the way modern-day football is going. If you're certainly a Manchester United supporter or somebody involved in Manchester United, and you're looking at Chelsea and Manchester City contesting a Club World Cup final, I think you're losing ground globally at a fairly rapid pace to both of those clubs.
I think you're losing pace in the immediate term because of the prize money. And I accept the prize money point, and I think that is the...
No, I think you're losing it in terms of fame and stature and kids wearing your jersey.
Really? I do not buy the point that this is going to increase the stature of a club. Not now. Like, you're talking about the future. Maybe we come back in 4 years and everybody's like, geez, remember those empty stadiums 4 years ago?
I don't want to be patronizing really hitting home to people in Brazil and Argentina, but I suspect Boca Juniors, Flamengo.
Where's the prestige amongst all the North American soccer fans? 423,004 empty seats so far. in this competition. Where's
people,
their prestige?
How many people have gone to the games?
Probably a similar number.
Hasn't caught the imagination. I'm not trying to build it up into something that it's not. I think that this tournament,
it's a postseason competition.
But if it was a postseason competition, I don't think the teams would have gone with these squads.
Why aren't you watching it?
Because, as I said, at the time I would be firstly, it's not on The Office. I think if it was on BBC and it was on RTE, I think everybody would be watching it. I think we would be finding a rhythm to our day around this. Obviously, it's a bizarrely conceived idea that didn't find any real backing from broadcasters when they had to do this deal with DAZN, where Saudi Arabia invest £1 billion in DAZN, DAZN give £1 billion to FIFA as a rights fee, and they try and create this tournament out of nothing. It's also a bit bizarre in that for once FIFA have gone with this sort of egalitarian selection process for the teams, which means Red Bull Salzburg are in there rather than having maybe the last eight of this season's Champions League, the very best in Europe right now, and it goes over a 4-year qualification period and the strange way they've put it all together. But I think just writing it off because we're not seeing it on our TV screens and maybe the attendances aren't what people fully expected is not quite doing justice to what a lot of these teams feel going there.
Yeah, I'm not sure I agree with that, certainly. And look, I know, again, I've said it multiple times, I know we're looking at this from a Premier League standpoint and a Champions League standpoint, but I'm just not, I just think that if it was a thing that was going to really hit home in different countries around the world, I think at least the home soccer fans would be showing up in the United States in just a few more numbers. I know tickets are probably extortionately
expensive.
The challenge
they're going to have is, and listen, this is obviously all part of, as we've always seen with FIFA presidents, that, you know, and we had Dylan Connolly on last week talking about playing for Auckland, and an amateur team, and they're going to get beaten 10-0 by Bayern Munich, and he's going back to his job as a physio straight after this. And it's an easy thing to say, well, Auckland shouldn't be in this. But obviously the support base for Infantino is built on these smaller associations and ensuring that there's always going to be spots for those teams. And the gap at club level is obviously way greater than it is at international level between Team 41 and Team 32 in this. And as we see next year, Team 41 and Team 48, there won't be anywhere near as big a gap in terms of quality, particularly if we're Team 48 getting in there. So that they're part of the challenges that you have at the early stages of a tournament like this. It's in America at just the wrong time. Like, we look at the bizarre situation of last night where Juventus are invited.
Explain this for people who might have missed this.
So Juventus are invited to the Oval Office to meet Donald Trump, who is there, and he greets quite a few of the players and managers and coaching staff, and Chiellini's standing there in the background in his suit watching on, and it's all sort of normal-ish in that big event happening in America. The sort of thing that in normal times you would go, fair enough. But Trump has the media in and decides to start answering questions, and obviously the Club World Cup isn't maybe front and centre around that, with, you know, we might ask an old question about Israel and Iran here, and that's where it goes. And Trump is answering questions as to, so what are you going to do about Iran? Well, I don't know what I'll do. They don't know what I'll do. You don't know. Who knows what I'll do? While standing in front of Christopher Weah, who's like,
well, Timothy
Weah, sorry, who's standing there going, what the hell is going on here? He's then asked a question about transgender athletes and tries to ask the Juventus players and, oh,
tries to ambush them, basically.
Yeah, could a man play in a woman's sport? Could a woman play in your team? Could a woman play in your team? They won't answer. The players are wisely keeping stum. Turns around to one of the executives at Juventus.
To Damian Comoli, the general manager
of Juventus.
Yeah.
Damian Comoli says, well, we actually have a very strong women's team.
Great answer, to be fair. It was
under that level of pressure.
Like, basically, he was trying to snare them into making some sort of transphobic comment, which is remarkable behavior in its own right. But I guess you kind of need a high bar for anything to kind of really stand out amongst the ridiculousness. And then I think Timothy Weah gave an interview afterwards, or he was commenting somewhere saying it was all just a very weird experience. And himself and Wes McKennie, I think, have been on the record in the past talking about Trump in a not too positive light. So they just look bemused.
Well, also bemused because Juventus were playing yesterday. So the reason they were in Washington is they were playing Al Ain yesterday afternoon. So this was part of their day.
Yeah, I don't think they had any choice not to go.
You were told you're going to come to the White House to meet Trump.
Yeah.
So again, what will happen in 12 months' time when teams are traveling from around the world? Who gets the invite? Who doesn't get the invite? In fairness, I feel like I would trust Hamer in this situation. I feel like he would bring a calmness to any situation. In fact, he might be just the man you want in the room when Trump is bombarded with questions about Iran and Israel.
Yeah, Hamer has navigated the complexities of Irish football, so he can certainly navigate the Oval Office.
He's and Nathan, you'd be in there as a member of the media as well.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Asking the big questions.
Yeah. It's like the pick out your green tie for Paddy's Day if you're a Polgor.
Well, now my opinion on all this has changed dramatically.
There's been a big reaction to this. James has been in touch to say Benfica versus Boca and Atletico versus Paris Saint-Germain both had a real big summer tournament feel to them. As the weeks go on and the poorer teams start to filter out, the competition will get much better, I feel, which could well be the case. You can also get us on YouTube. On the chat there, John S. has been in touch to say, lads, this competition is about as pointless as LIV Golf. Nobody I know is watching or cares, even fans of these clubs. And then Owen has been in touch to say, I hope all the smaller clubs do well in this Club World Cup, but I presume the majority of people in Europe have absolutely no interest in this tournament, which is a vanity project for Infantino. There's too much football already, and this will probably lead to a player strike in Europe sooner rather than later. And then finally, Patrick is chatting about the time zone in which the World Cup is taking place next year. And he says, I'm thinking of 0-2 and the madness of being in the pub, having a pint and a breakfast roll at 6:30 a.m. Good times. The news round is coming your way with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
In case you missed this morning's Off the Ball breakfast, we had this.
I met Shane Walsh and he told us about a team exercise they did where his teammates, they were telling him why they trust him to take their shots. So the faith that they have in him and the confidence that they, even if he misses a shot, they back him to shoot again. This was fellow Galway players vocalising this to Shane Walsh.
And there was also some of this.
I'd like rugby to go a little faster. There's 66 minutes of average, I think 65, 66 minutes of ball and play time in an NRL game, and there's sometimes 35 in a... And mate, I've profited from that. I've taken advantage of it. When I was with the Argies, we played All Blacks in Sydney when they beat them the first time. I think there's 29 minutes of ball and play.
Classic.
Hey, who cares, we won.
You can catch everything from this morning's Off the Ball breakfast elsewhere on the Go Loud app and every weekday morning from 7:30.
Where are we starting, Carl?
Let's start with the golf. Rory McIlroy is going really well at the Travelers Championship in Connecticut. He's now 6 under par. He's got one hole left to play. It's been a very good opening round for him. He's 2 shots off the lead, held by Austin Eckroe. And Shane Lowry also in the field. He's among the later starters. He's level par through 5 holes of his opening round. Then the action continuing as well at the Women's PGA Championship in Texas, where Leona Maguire is going quite well. She is level par in the latter stages of her opening round, now into the back nine. Leona Maguire, in fact, she's moved to 1 under par as I speak. So that's Leona Maguire in action at the Women's PGA Championship with a couple of holes left to play. Minji Lee is the leader there on 3 under par alongside Gino Titicul at that major championship. And there's a great round today for Max Kennedy on the Challenge Tour. He shot a round of 60 at the Blot Play 9 tournament in Northern France. He has a 4-shot lead there. He's on 10 under par. Mark Power is on 4 under par, who's also in the mix.
Anything we can glean from Rory today, Nathan, with regards to Portrush chances?
Yeah, that's whatever disastrous form he had 2 weeks ago in Canada and the real struggles we had with the driver are not as extreme and as long-term an issue as we feared that they may be, and that maybe his season was at an end, but it would just really sort of peter out. There were signs last week that the driver wasn't the big issue. There were other problems, more so with his approach play. So I think get out of America, get back home, spend a few weeks meeting some friends, getting lots of pats on the back, turn up at Portrush and feeling good about golf. And yeah, I think we're definitely in a better position with McIlroy than we were 7 days ago in terms of what he might do at Portrush.
Yeah, for sure. He needs to go and earth himself, I think. You know, do a Luis Enrique on the course in Portrush and just chill out a little bit. Although it does seem that he's like maybe calmed down a small bit if this week's public pronouncements or anything to go by. You're turning to the rugby next, Colin.
Yeah, preparations continue for the Lions ahead of their warm-up match against Argentina in Dublin tomorrow night. There'll be a number of debuts for Andy Farrell's side at the Aviva Stadium, and what'll be their first ever game on Irish soil. Three Irish internationals in the starting team, Bundy Aki, Finlay Beelam and Tadhg Byrne, will all be in the starting 15, and Munster's Byrne is relishing the opportunity to represent the Lions.
A lot of learning over the last week and a half. It's been put to us about playing as a line, and what that is. And I think it's raising your game, and you know, I think we're going to need to see that from each individual in the 23. And I think if we do that, the performance will look after itself.
That's some really good insight on Off the Ball Breakfast this morning.
Yeah, great interview with the former Leinster head coach Michael Cech, and he's backed Johnny Sexton to succeed in coaching over the coming years. Sexton has taken steps into coaching with Ireland, and he's now part of Andy Farrell's backroom team for this summer's Lions tour. And Cech, who was on Off the Ball Breakfast this morning, gave this insight into what he believes it takes for world-class players to make the leap to becoming world-class coaches.
Coaching in rugby is a little bit more, I don't know, hasn't got a history of the best players coming back to, especially in the modern era, coming back to coach. And because, again, like I said, a lot of them struggle because they've got such a high expectation. And if what they have to understand is some players won't meet that expectation initially, and it's their role to then help them along the way. So that's something that Felipe's definitely done. And Johnny's smart enough to get a handle on that for sure. If he's making the decision, because at first he sort of stepped away, and I don't think if he's making the decision to have a think about it now, then, and he's smart enough character to understand that, yeah.
And then we have some additions to the Ireland squad.
Yeah, Jermaine Kilgallen, Brian Gleeson and Evan O'Connell have all linked up with the Ireland squad. The Munster trio are included as additional training panellists ahead of the upcoming summer tour games against Georgia and Portugal. The head coach Paul O'Connell called them up after Ulster back row James McNabney suffered an ACL injury in training. It looks like that injury will sideline him long term.
Now we are turning back to soccer.
Aoife Mannion has departed Manchester United, the club releasing that news this evening. The Ireland international leaves the club 4 years after arriving from Manchester City, and Elisa Ahern has also left United at the conclusion of her contract with the club.
Yeah, what does this mean? Aoife Mannion going to be looking for a new club? Obviously, we've kind of associated with her as kind of like the Irish face at Manchester United for a while during their ups and downs over the last couple of years. Can she play at that level?
You'd hope so. I think she played 12, 13 games last season, you know, quite a few of them off the bench, and after a few injury-plagued seasons, looked to be getting somewhere back to proper form and fitness. And we need players to stay in the WSL. It does seem like there's, you know, quite a gap in terms of quality between the top tier and the championship. So you would hope that she finds a spot somewhere, because you know her importance to Ireland has obviously only grown when you know three of our greatest ever centre backs have all left in the last year.
Yeah, very true. We've got a couple of stories regarding fines here. We'll start with the Tottenham Hotspur news.
Yeah, Tottenham have been fined £75,000 by the Football Association for homophobic chanting by their fans. Spurs condemned the abuse following their 3-0 win at Manchester United last September, calling it simply unacceptable. The club also promised to take the strongest possible action against anyone found to have taken part in it. And other fine this evening for Manchester City. They've been fined over £1 million by the Premier League after repeatedly kicking off or restarting matches late last season. 9 of City's matches last season started or restarted late, with the longest delay coming before the second half of the Manchester Derby in December of 2024, which resumed 2 minutes and 24 seconds later than billed. The Premier League said City had accepted and apologised for the breaches.
Big competitive advantage doing this?
I'm sure they've thought about it. They must have some sort of a process that they go through. I don't think the dressing rooms at the Etihad are particularly far from pitch side or anything like that. I did notice on Sunday in the Mayo match, I was like, that'd still be halftime. How long is halftime in Gaelic games?
Long time, Carl, I'd say.
15 minutes, is it?
It was definitely heading for 20 minutes by the time Mayo and Donegal got back underway.
Mm. 15 to 20, I'd say. And
probably throw Donegal out for that sort of breach.
I think so, yeah. Mayo could just hop in their place.
Why not?
The other thing is the gap between full time and extra time. If it's a draw, That's like definitely longer than halftime, isn't it?
Yeah, was it Kerry and Cork this year? It was an extraordinary long time between the two. Yeah,
Donegal Armagh as well. That definitely seems to be. They seem to be pretty generous with whatever time they gave.
It. £1 million is a heck of a fine, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I guess there's probably ad breaks that broadcasters are planning, so the games generally finish at about 5-6 minutes.
Would you notice that at a Premier League game that you're commentating on that? The halftime would be fairly on the dot when it's televised.
Rarely. Now, yeah. Now that you say it about City, you know, you'd probably have a bit more time to get down, indulge in the Manchester City press room before you're back and you'd have your food digested and everything. But no, I don't think it's ever massively stood out.
Leaves them out standing in the cold, isn't that the...
Yeah,
it's exactly. An age-old tactic.
You'd wonder as well, given like the 38 games they played in the Premier League this season were essentially all just pre-season games for the main event this summer. So, like,
exactly.
I bet you they'll
turn up on time for this.
Well, yeah. No sign of traffic that'll hold them up anyway. Do you want to finish up on the biggest show on sport?
Yeah, the Club World Cup. One of the games actually this evening was held up for a little bit because of the weather. We think it was thunderstorms that held up Palmeiras against Al Ahly, but it's back underway.
Shambles.
Palmeiras leading by 2-0 there. There's 17 minutes left to play, so long as the weather plays ball.
You wouldn't see that happening in the Carabao Cup, would you?
No. And definitely not the Conference League.
The other game to keep an eye on tonight at 8 o'clock before we all go to bed is Inter Miami against Porto. 8 o'clock start for that one. Luis Suarez and Lionel Messi in the Inter Miami team.
In the prime of their lives. This is the stuff that we love.
Well, that's a different conversation. This Inter Miami shouldn't even be there. Obviously, there's some questionable decisions that have been made along the way. But I notice you probably haven't read out the million texts in agreement with me about Chelsea preferring to win this over the Conference League.
Right. It was more kind of a remark on that. But about the same. Like, who cares?
Oh, geez, that's
who cares about
some
either?
Turnaround, isn't
it? No. I would still take the Conference League over the World Cup. As a trophy.
Like, Cahill, come on, you have the deciding vote.
What does the trophy look like for the Club World Cup?
I have no idea what either does.
Yeah.
The Club World Cup trophy is going to be impressive.
Yeah, it's got to be.
Is it the one with the key?
I assume the Club World Cup trophy has history to it.
Like, there is... True, Infantino wasn't carrying around the key to the Conference League, so I will give the Club World Cup trophy that. We are completely out of time, so while you're searching that, Nathan, we're going to have to say goodbye. Cahill, thank you very much for tonight's news round.
Oh, wow.
We're going to be talking to Padraig Amond next. Oh my God, wow, he's just brought up an image of the Club World Cup. I take everything back.
That's incredible.
World Cup trophy is insane. It's like
I've never seen a trophy like it. It's like 5 trophies in one.
It's remarkable. It's like a portal in gilded form. Right, we're going to take a quick break.
It's got the rules of the game inscribed in it.
Amazing. Padraig Amond up next. We can't wait for that.
I'll follow this.
The news round on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.